Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
It was making me think of, like, whenever I think of fighting Yahweh, I always think of Jacob, right? So it's making me think of that word. Yeah. If we were to stay in that Torah portion, wrestling him, how far are we into the generations? I don't know. It's just making me think of that, even just generationally, when we stop fighting him and mm-hmm. start moving for him.
Yeah.
And we're still kind of in the midst of all that because, you know, moving forward, the promised land and all of that. But that's what it's making me think of what we're wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate the environment that's been set and the words that have been spoken over the week and right now. And we're going to have Mom light the Shabbat candles so we can enter in. And while she's doing that, we'll go ahead and have Sean share about Remy this week.
Stand up.
Stand up so everybody can see your face.
I don't really have much to say about Remy, but what Yahweh was showing me through Remy this week was... my mind's going blank. Was...
Why did you think?
Originally I took him because of my struggles with intimacy, and then through the week he was like showing me kind of like why intimacy, because I don't really know why that's like a important thing yet, but he was showing me, so how do I say that, he was showing me like he was showing me that when I don't think I waver and stuff, but he was showing me wherever I stand, like intimacy is so that I can be confident wherever I stand, so that people don't mistake my like awkwardness or whatever for not being confident in what I believe in. That's basically it.
You had two
examples. Oh yeah, cause like there's one kid in school and I like he asked about it, when I would answer I was like not confident, and then he answered like he felt bad for me and like I was being forced into this, kind of like that. And then there'd be other kids where I would answer like confidently, and they would just say like, "That's cool."
We worked a lot today because when Sean says intimacy, I think what he's trying to say is that he doesn't like communication in a superficial way. So he likes deep communication, but he's awkward in being able to do it because it's vulnerable to let somebody know who he is.
Yeah.
So we were like working on how to then publicly say it and talk it through, but it was super powerful what he was basically saying, because he had to tell me that he didn't take Remy because it's exactly what you just said. He didn't take Remy because he is having to wrestle for a role or wrestle with Yahweh.
Yeah.
His conviction is his conviction. The issue is outside of intimacy, then he doesn't know how to not be awkward in explaining that conviction.
Yeah.
And the two examples that he gave was that I thought it was super powerful, because when he didn't know how to say it confidently, he was actually accused that his parents made him do it. But then when he would say it confidently, kids would be like, "That's cool." So it just shows, not that he's wrestling in the conviction, but how we portray it publicly, which is huge with what's going to happen tonight. What you do with that conviction publicly is either going to cause accusation that you're forced into this, or truth will expose that what he's trying to say is that there's something greater than church out there, guys. So, anyways. You did good. Are you taking
it? Was that, were you done?
Yeah.
Okay. I told him that he should, if somebody comes up to him and tries to take it really quick, he should be like, you're not allowed to have it, see what would happen. He's like, I'm not doing that.
Off my chin.
What? Oh, yes, tonight. Well, it's Dad's turn tonight, so you guys will get that handsome face at you tonight. I don't think I want to, I have a word for everyone tonight, but I don't know if I want to jump into it until Mount Sinai's taught on. But it has a lot to do with what you just said about knowing your place, kind of with a different spin, but there obviously there was a lot that happened in this Torah portion, as always. Let me start with this. There is a word coming for you guys. The big picture is going to be expressed in what covenant is. Then if we have time, I do want to try to take us into some teaching on the pattern of covenant. Because covenant is this like word that's used.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like it's a word that's used and we don't really know what it means. So it's kind of this whimsical idea.
Yeah.
But it's the foundation of what we stand on. So if we don't understand that word, then... Then we're missing a huge part of it. So I do want to kind of break down that there is a cycle and a pattern to covenant. Even though covenant is a noun, within the pattern of covenant is absolutely action, and it's a back and forth. So I kind of want to go into that, and then there's actually a couple words for the family tonight. I went over this last week, so I'm gonna redo it again. The title that I have for tonight, maybe you have a different title, but this is him saying, I am your covenant. So all the I ams, I am your covenant. So I really want to break down that word covenant. Because when he says, I am your covenant, what does that mean? The best way for me to explain this, at least the way I've understood it, is the title is Covenant, the Circle, which I found interesting because we're in the month of Samech. But it's absolutely a circle. Covenant, in my mind, covenant is a circle. Covenant is cyclical. It's never ending. You could think of it as a ring. It's why Jason was talking about the most confident decision had nothing to do with, will I get through my wedding day? We all understand that if you say yes to a wedding day, you are saying yes to the rest of your life. It's not a day. That's understood. What's not understood is the relationship with him should be the same. Because we've had this flippant answer an altar call, you're saved. There's no concept. You are making a legal, binding, sanctified agreement that affects two different parties that will be forever unending and cyclical, and it's a ring. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So looking at the word covenant like marriage, in the sense of what you're saying yes to is for life. Okay? So, or think of circle or a ring, which is why, I mean, we say that in a wedding ceremony, like this ring symbolizes your never-ending covenant because it doesn't break and all that kind of stuff. It's also a symbol of this is who I belong to. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go through the actual word covenant. I did this last week and I'm going to hand it off and then we'll see how far we get. Does that sound good? The word in Hebrew for covenant is, I'm probably going to say this wrong, berith. B-E-R-I-T-H, brief. The word means alliance, which means a union formed for mutual benefit. It's a state of being joined, a relationship based on the same interest. It's a pledge. It's an agreement. The root of that word, which I find so interesting, all of us, we need to read the Torah portion. All of us read the Torah portion, right? Okay, well, we're going to read it again. But in that Torah portion, what did they do in the presence of Yahweh? They dined. So the root of covenant is to eat, consume, devour, which allows you to create, shape, form, fashion, new conditions of circumstances. This is the root of covenant, you guys. Transformation. Create something new. Birth. Miracles. Make yourselves fat. So, I'm going to end there, but I just wanted that foundation for us to understand that we want to dive into, if we're going to talk about the big picture of covenant, let's really make sure if we are founded, just Kingdom Heirs, we are founded on covenantal relationships. I don't know how many times I've heard, you only have covenant with one person. That type of covenant, that does not mean that there's not covenant within community, and we see that here, or else Yahweh would have said, I only need to make an agreement with one person.
Yeah.
So the definition of covenant is an agreement that benefits mutual parties that is never-ending cycle, which we're going to get into, that has to do with action and response and obedience and all of that stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that while we're getting into the big picture that we are understanding, because we say we are a covenantal people. That we are beyond a fellowship. We are beyond even family, because you can choose to disown family in the sense of blood.
You know,
I can't choose my blood family. I get to choose covenant.
That's
what all of this is about. Because once they left, we know that it was both Jew and Gentile. Wrong wording for this context, but it was both Egyptian and or Gentile and Israelite. That was a mixed multitude. It is no longer about your bloodline that gives you access to covenant. It is by your choice. So I choose to be in a covenant. I can't then 5 years, 6 years, 10 years down the road be annoyed by my choice because I don't want to uphold the agreement.
Right.
I mean, you can, but then you're going to be fighting, and then it's not as fun. So, does it make sense? So we're going to tackle covenant tonight.
All right.
I'm not as good of an opener as you are.
That was pretty good. All right. Reggie, are you reading?
Yes. Genesis chapter 24, right?
Yep. Praise the Lord. These last couple, last week trying to tackle three chapters.
Then to Moses he said, come up to Adonai, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and worship from afar. Moses alone is to approach Adonai, but the others may not draw near, nor are the people to go up with him. So Moses came and told the people all the words of Adonai as well as all the ordinances. All the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which Adonai has spoken we will do. So Moses wrote down all the words of Adonai, then rose up early in the morning and built an altar below the mountain, along with the 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel. He then sent out young men of Ben Israel who sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings of oxen to Adonai. Then Moses took half of the blood and put it in the basins, and the other half he poured out against the altar. He took the scroll of the covenant and read it in the hearing of all the people. Again they said, "All that Adonai has spoken we will do and obey." Then Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "Behold the blood of the covenant, which Adonai has cut with you, in agreement with all these words." Then Moses and Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up. They saw the God of Israel, and under his feet was something like a pavement of sapphire, as clear as the very heavens. Yet he did not raise his hand against the nobles of Ben Israel, so they beheld God and ate and drank. Then Adonai said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain and stay there, and I will give you the tables of stone with the Torah and the mitzvah, which I have written, so that you may instruct them." So Moses rose along with his attendant, Joshua, and Moses went up onto the mountain of God. To the elders he said, "Wait for us here until we come back to you. See, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a dispute should go to them." When Moses went up on the mountain, the cloud covered it. The cloud of Adonai settled upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. Then on the seventh day he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. The appearance of the glory of Adonai was like a consuming fire on the top of the mountain in the sight of Ben Israel. So Moses entered into the midst of the cloud and went up onto the mountain. Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights.
Everybody good?
Yeah.
I feel like this Torah portion is like deceptive. Not the actual Torah portion, but it's so short.
Yeah.
And it's like really detailed. Short and detailed, so I feel like it's deceptive as to how big of a deal what's happening in this Torah portion is, because it's a huge turning point just in our history. It's a major turning point from everything we've seen happen up until this time, and then moving forward, there's some critical things that take place in this Torah portion, and so that's why I feel like it's almost like you just read those details and you hear the name of Bihu and you're like, you know, by the time you even give that a second thought, you're already done reading the Torah portion and then you just move on to the next one. One of the things that I want to just kind of hit on as a review is for us to remember that leading up to this point, this nation, this family, all these people in this photo, right? They've been in the wilderness after they exited Egypt. And Egypt, and we've touched on this, Egypt was a couple of things. Yahweh was deconstructing creation that was essentially out of order and in opposition to him.
Yeah.
Through the plagues, he basically tore down what man had built and manipulated with his creation. So he essentially tore down what he didn't approve of, and he made a means for his people to divorce themselves from Egypt. Okay? Now, what we see in this Torah portion on Mount Sinai is the process that was started in Exodus of deconstructing chaos and divorcing his people from Egypt. This, where we're at right now, couldn't happen, or excuse me, this whole process couldn't be complete without Sinai happening, which is the Torah portion we're reading now. So to say that in a more clear way, the process that was started in Exodus was not complete when they left. It's being completed in this Torah portion. Because what he's doing after he deconstructed chaos and divorced the people from Egypt, now he's establishing a foundation and he's establishing a covenant. Mm-hmm. So you can see what he undid being redid in order under his authority.
Yeah.
Okay? So things are coming full circle. Everything that Mom preached about last week if you guys remember, it was a big chunk of the 613 laws. I think you said there was like 100 or something.
Right? 100 are in Exodus. We tackled about 85.
Okay, so we saw a huge amount of mitzvot last week.
Yeah.
And another thing we have to remember is that what we're looking at, which is essentially the Book of the Covenant, what we normally call the Ten Commandments, is just affirming all of those laws. Okay, there is no part of this that this is like pushing those out of the way and saying just focus on these. Because ultimately what the Book of the Covenant is doing is it's reaffirming and pointing to and solidifying all of those laws, because it's like the heart of everything. To back up the letter, it's like the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. Okay? You can't have the spirit of the law without the letter of the law. Okay? In order to get past how deceptively short this Torah portion is, I feel like I have to take a step back and talk about things outside the Bible so that we can have the proper paradigm to understand the significance of this Torah portion historically, but then also the significance for us right now.
Okay?
Because like she said, when we talk about covenant, you throw that word around so much and it loses its value over the course of time. We definitely have lost the context because that's something we've strived to get back to, is the original context of what was Yahweh saying at that time. What was Moshe and his understanding of the context? What was he trying to articulate when he's talking about covenant? Okay. And when I get into this, just remember that when you look at that picture and when you read this Torah portion, you're reading about the birth of a nation. Okay? It's an actual nation of people. It's a nation state with its own identity and all of these things. So one thing I want to point out, and I want you guys to kind of write these things down so you can go back and consider these things over time, is when we think about the most powerful empires or nation states or people groups throughout history, there are shared characteristics that many of them have that you could use to describe the most powerful, notorious, whatever, successful nations in history. Okay, and I'm going to read some of those. I want you guys to write these down and just think about, historically speaking, things like, you know, places like Rome or, you know, the United States or Soviet Union or whatever it may be. But these are some shared characteristics that you could use to describe most powerful nation states throughout history. One's being central authority or government. And these are in no particular order. Military strength. The ability to conquest or expand. Technological or scientific advancement. Technological or scientific advancement. Strategic alliances. And you don't, I mean, you don't have to write all of these down, but you just so you can kind of look back and remember. Consolidation of power. The ability to adapt to change. And then the last one I wrote down was economic control. So if you kind of look at any powerful nation throughout history, it's going to check a lot of these boxes because they strive to do these things in order to be powerful. Okay. Now, why that's important for us, that's a critical perspective for us to have, is because when you look at this Torah portion, Yahweh is extending on Mount Sinai his character to his people.
Yep.
So when you talk about the nation of Israel, which is our history, our ancestry, then you consider how Yahweh is, of all of those characteristics that I just described, which of those or any of those do you see in this Torah portion? Do you see any of those characteristics that you could describe any powerful nation throughout history? Do you see any of those characteristics in this Torah portion? None of them. And this is powerful to me because when I just think about us now and our pursuit of Yahweh and His character and who He is, how He is, the way in which we're supposed to walk and live out life, the way that we identify ourselves is part of the commonwealth of Israel. That sheds a clear perspective on how set apart we are. Mm-hmm. Because when you stack who we are up to all of the most powerful empires throughout history, we literally share none of those characteristics. So then, this brings me to the proper perspective for us to understand historically and also how it applies today, is that there's one supreme characteristic that Yahweh cares about extending to His bride, and that is covenant, which she talked about. We're gonna break that down and I believe put words to kind of the spiritual structure of what covenant looks like. But that's a powerful thing to realize, because the nation of Israel didn't stack up to any of the most powerful nations throughout history. None of them. They don't stack up in any way, shape, or form. Yet Yahweh, the all-knowing creator, chose to characterize and define His chosen people and their very nature by the supreme characteristic, which is covenant. His characteristic that He chose. He could have chose any of these things. He could have said, I'm going to make my people a military power that could never be dominated.
Yeah.
I'm going to make them economically superior.
Yeah.
They're going to be the most advanced nation on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
He could have done any of that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it just, I feel like, puts the proper perspective on what's happening, because it isn't just simply in agreement. It's not simply just a transaction that's taking place. It's Yahweh closing the gap between His character. Megan kind of talked about this. He's closing a gap between His character and our character.
Yeah.
And the way you close that gap is oneness. You engage in covenant to where there is no gap anymore.
Yeah.
But Yahweh is so holy and so just and so righteous, He can't just close that gap without His people being postured and prepared like they have been up to this point to ascend the mountain and sit in His presence for 7 days in the cloud and engage Him on the seventh day, which is rest. Right? So I want to just kind of break down covenant a little bit so that we understand that this is the origin of who we are, but it's also Yahweh extending His identity to the nation of Israel. This is an important aspect of who we are in history, because it's a turning point. Because leading up to this, all of the covenants up to this point, covenant can mean a couple of different things in terms of how many parties are involved. A covenant can be undertaken by one person, which would essentially equate to somebody promising something. It doesn't matter what the other person does or not. If I promise, if I promise Jacob, hey, I'm gonna give you your stuff back by the end of the week. He has no part of that, right? I just engaged in covenant, undertaking it on my own, which is essentially what Yahweh was doing up until this point, was expressing promises over His people. I'm going to multiply you. You're going to be sent out to the nations, right? All of these things. I'm going to give all your descendants a promised land, right? These were all promises, things He was going to do that didn't require His people to do anything.
Yeah.
Okay? One of the important differences here is that this covenant is one of the first times you see mutual parties undertaking the same covenant. And it's highlighted in the Torah portion when they said, we have heard what you have said, or we acknowledge what you have said, and we shall obey. Right? Essentially, they're saying, we hear and we obey. So we hear what you said, we heard your aspect of the covenant, and we're going to be obedient to that, which is their response and their portion of undertaking that covenant. Okay, up until this point, we don't see that. This is really the first time when the Torah portion talks about they see him walking on the pavement of sapphire. And Moshe is documenting this, and he says that they didn't observe Yahweh raise his hand against them. Another distinction is because coming out of Egypt, they witnessed Yahweh's presence, but it was in a manner of authority in dealing with chaos.
Yeah, right.
His presence was signified by plagues.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Still witnessing Yahweh's presence, right? But in a very destructive, like, wrath,
yeah,
vengeance type of way. Whereas here, it's like she mentioned, they're ascending to a place, seeing Yahweh and eating and drinking with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has never happened before. Okay? So there's a turning point. And something that's important to recognize is that a couple of things. There's permanence to the pattern that we're reading about. There's a pattern and a protocol of covenant that is being established in this Torah portion, and it is designed to exist until the end of the age. Okay, so we see, and by the way, this protocol and pattern that's being established doesn't do away with the previous covenants. Because just like she said, covenants are dynamic. They're living. They're growing. They're always changing, right? Just like the example of an actual marriage, you don't just engage in covenant on the day you get married and then that's it, right? It's growing. It's evolving. You're in it until death, till the end of the age, so to speak, okay? And I'm going to talk about that here in a bit to prove to you that this is a pattern and a protocol that spans time across what people call the Old Testament and what people call the New Testament. It's a united document. Scripture is one continuous scroll where you see this pattern and this protocol taking place across time. Okay? So when we talk about covenant, there's a few things. There's a gap that's being eliminated. Obviously, if you think of it that way and you think of all the Torah portions we've spent time reading up to this point, it's easy to see the gap that has to be reconciled between Yahweh and his people. Okay? And he has taken them down a path full of grace and mercy that we see out of every Torah portion to get them to this place where he is going to close the gap with his people. Okay? So the gap's being closed, oneness is being restored, and it's not simply an agreement, but it creates the foundation to receive Torah in its fullness. Okay? Now, what is the Torah? We've been saying up to this point that Torah, which they receive on Mount Sinai, the heart of it, is the loving instructions of the Father, but I kind of want to expand on that a little bit. That in this Torah portion, what we're seeing is what is received, what is mutually agreed to, what Yahweh initiates is giving of his Torah, which is basically three things: his will, his wisdom, and his ways. His will, his wisdom, and his ways. I would say that's an expanded definition, not that that's the fullness of the definition of Torah either, but for us, we've been saying the loving instructions of the Father, but now we're looking at Yahweh as a bridegroom who has a will, He has wisdom, and he has certain ways that he's extending to his people that they are also going to embody after they engage in this covenant. They're going to engage in his will, his wisdom, and his ways because now they carry his name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's
good. So there's a deeper understanding of covenant, and what I would call it is covenant life. They didn't just engage in covenant like as an interaction or as a transaction. They were actually receiving covenant life. Like covenant for life. Covenant life. The way they walk, they pursue his will, they embody his wisdom, and the way in which they walk that out takes, it occupies the substance of their life. Okay? And there's a couple of things that happen that Yahweh desires. His first desire is to be revealed. Right? Covenant, engaging in covenant and covenant life as a community makes way for him to be revealed to us. And part of my hope tonight is that what really got stirred up in me as I was preparing for releasing tonight was that we would have now, today, we would have a deeper appreciation or a deeper understanding for what it is that Yahweh called us to do. It's like she said, we're based, our whole existence is about covenant community and covenant with the people that are here. That has been our heart from day one. That's been buried in our heart before we even recognized it. But my hope would be that as we look at this Torah portion and we see our ancestors make this turning point in history as far as the nation of Israel, that we would have a deeper appreciation of what covenant is so that we understand now the mechanism that Yahweh gave us to have greater intimacy with him that we wouldn't have if we didn't have this. It makes me so, like, it's kind of weird. I could get so fired up about it and I could care less about the times that we've gotten criticism, most of the criticism of just the way that we've been walking has been because of the way that we verbalize what we're experiencing.
Right.
Spirit of adoption, mothers and fathers, sons and daughters. The way that we walk is in a manner of covenant life. Like, I consider everyone here a son or a daughter, a grandson or a granddaughter, because we are in covenant, because we choose you. Right? In this interaction, Yahweh chose his people and they chose him back. That's hearts turning to one another to where we have that in this community, and we're not, you know, I laugh when people say, like, oh, they're a cult and they're whatever, but they're making that claim or that statement, I would suspect, not from a place of community or of covenant community. They don't have the paradigm of covenant community, which is why the only way they can describe what maybe they see here, they don't even see it, but what they do see of it, what small fraction they do see of it, or the fruit of it, the only way they can describe that is a cult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things where we could have protesters outside, we could have people lined up and down Arrowhead Avenue chanting we're a cult. I would just walk in like I would any other Friday. I don't care. But having this greater appreciation or this deeper respect for what it is that Yahweh did on Mount Sinai sheds light and brings clarity to what it is that we have been after, not understanding the depth of what it is we've been after.
Yeah, right.
Like, we have done everything in our power to walk out the directives of Yahweh, which has gotten us to this place now, today. Mm-hmm. It has gotten us to this place, and it's just like your children. You teach them what to do before they understand what they're doing. Yeah. We've been walking out Yahweh saying, do this, I need you to do that, I need you to go here, stay here, I want you to express my heart over this person, right? He's not explaining himself or where we're going, he's just asking us to take action and be obedient to what he wants us to do. And at some point in time, like tonight, like this week, he sheds more light on what it is that we have here that has been a result of all the simple actions of obedience over the past 20 years.
Right.
Speaking from my personal experience. Obviously, you guys have actions of obedience you've taken over the last, you know, however many years, and I can think of tons of examples, but it has brought us all to this place.
Right.
And it's a place where now I'm getting a level of understanding or revelation because of the community.
Yeah.
Because of covenant life. Covenant life opens up the door for greater intimacy because his desire through covenant is that he would be revealed to his people.
Right.
If we're his people, then that means the fact that we're walking in his will, his wisdom, and his ways to the best of our understanding is unlocking intimacy and revelation of who he is. Right? So there's a deeper knowledge of covenant life, and my heart is that we would all have a greater appreciation to the point to where it doesn't matter the critics, it doesn't matter the criticism, it doesn't matter how loud it is, it doesn't matter how many people are saying what they're saying, right? We're going to be like Sean when he confidently said, if Yahweh told him to grab a 25-pound weight, sounds right? To anybody he says that to, right on the surface, they're going to be like, they're not going to have a frame of reference for that. But when he confidently explains why it is what he's doing and that he was led to do it, everybody was like, when the confidence was there, everybody was like, cool. And I'm pretty sure that experience is probably shared with anybody that's carried Remy. When you're confident, people are curious. They want to know. They want to know what's, man, that's awesome. They're excited about it. Right? But when we hem and haw, or we're not standing on our convictions, or we're not confident about it because we haven't embraced it to the point to where we're just like excited to share about what Yahweh's doing, then it can be perceived as like, what's going on over there? Right? And so I think well, most of the time
the accusation was, I feel bad for you. It seems like your parents are strict. But like, relate that to his instructions. But when you declare it through the life and outside of that filter, most of the time it was, that's awesome. You know.
So within the framework of covenant and covenant life, Yahweh can reveal himself. Which makes sense, because that's how he designed covenant. You engage in covenant, you can fully reveal yourself, right? There's an aspect of not fully, all throughout scripture, that you don't fully reveal certain things that you value outside of covenant, right? You see that across scripture. So one aspect is that he can then reveal himself when you engage in a way, number one, where you're not interpreting what he said, right? You're not hearing what he said and then filtering it, interpreting it, making sure that it's convenient for you, making sure that it aligns with your perspective,
right?
You're hearing what he said and you're saying, we shall obey. I hear you and I obey. Those who have ears to hear, right? There's an element of that theonomy of I hear your directives and I obey. That sets the stage for covenant to where once you engage in it, he can reveal himself, which is the fullness of Torah, which is he says, now I'm going to let you know my will. How many people struggle throughout their life wanting to know what the will of God is in your life?
Yeah,
that's probably the biggest question people have, whether they articulate it like that or not. Mm-hmm. I just want to know what the purpose of my life is. What is the point of me living? When people can't figure that out, that's when people commit suicide. When they don't know their purpose. And Yahweh, here he is, he says, once you step into the framework of covenant, I will reveal my will to you. I'll give you wisdom on how to wrap your head around that. And I'm going to give you my ways so that you walk like me, you talk like me, you carry my last name, you know my purpose for your life, you know your place in the world, you know what you're supposed to do on this earth, right? You know what your destiny is. You have the confidence to cause him to be reflected in you. That's the other thing. He wants to reveal himself, and he wants himself to be reflected through you. You can't reflect him if he hasn't revealed himself to you. He can't reveal himself to you unless you hear what he's saying and you obey what he's saying and you step into the covenant framework that is not just an agreement, but it's an actual commitment to walk his way for life. So bring it back to the context today. We have that same mechanism right here. The supreme characteristic that Yahweh chose to identify and define his people that is not one of the characteristics of any of the most powerful nations in history. The supreme characteristics that he decided is not one of the characteristics of any of the most powerful nations in history. The checklists don't overlap. That characteristic, that supreme characteristic, is the foundation of Kingdom Heirs. So I want us to have a deep appreciation for what it is that Yahweh is doing. And connect that the actions that we've been taking over time that maybe didn't make sense at a certain point in time, now it makes sense.
Yes.
Because the covenant community that we're engaged in, that has been cultivated by Yahweh's leading, that we have pressed into, that we have heard and obeyed to the best of our ability, that many have fought, that we've wrestled, people have tried to push away, right? Across the spectrum, whatever the case may be, now we're at a place to where this is Yahweh's supreme characteristic for his people. Covenant life. Covenant community. Right? We're brethren, spiritual mothers and fathers, spiritual sons and daughters, covenant community. We talk about blood versus blood when Yahweh himself had his blood family knocking at the door and he said, these people are my family. How can he say that? Because he knew he was going to eventually fulfill his life's destiny by walking out the exact same pattern and protocol that is established on Mount Sinai. The exact same same pattern. And what is the supreme characteristic Yahweh was after? The exact same thing. Covenant life. Covenant community. And that is what Yahweh has cultivated here. And that's why I believe, I suspect, when somebody looks at what we're doing and they don't have a paradigm of hear and obey, they don't have a paradigm of the continuity of Scripture being one continuous scroll where we don't throw out one portion and take whatever we want from wherever, and they're foreign to stepping within a framework where you understand his will, his wisdom, and his ways, and they're looking from the outside in, trying to figure out how to describe covenant life.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see why it looks like a cult.
Yeah.
Right? If we're supposed to do like we see our Father doing, and there's dynamics of a supreme characteristics that are being multiplied in the house, you can have a leader or a mentor or somebody who is in an ascended place on your behalf say, this is what we're going to do. This is where we're going. We're going to stop right here. And people will say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
Right? Oh, are you a cult because you just do whatever? No, that's just that's the way that somebody interprets dynamics of covenant life.
Yeah, that's good.
They said, we heard what you have said and we shall obey.
Yeah.
When Moshe sprinkled blood on the pillars, those pillars were representations of the 12 tribes of Israel into eternity. Whatever tribe you're a part of, that blood was sprinkled on you then. So this covenant life that Yahweh has blessed us with, this means, this mechanism, this way that he extends, he's closing the gap now. He's doing it then, he's doing it now. Between his character and our character. We've walked out a process over the last 10 years that I think with that verbiage, if you look back, you can see easily that our character was way over here on another planet. His character is his character, holy and righteous and just, and he started closing the gap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the intention that he was going to give us his last name and extend his covenant to us, to the point where we're ready, we're in a place to say, we have heard what you have said and we will obey. Now the door is open for him to say, now I can expose the secret or the mystery of my will. Not just for your life, but his will. His will. Not just, because now we're past the point of like, If you're seated at the base of Mount Sinai, you're not like, hey, is this the job I'm supposed to get? Who cares? Who cares? Right?
For real.
So the gap's being closed, and the covenant is not static.
Praise the Lord.
It's evolving. It's emerging. It's maturing. It's growing. Right? It's a living thing that is always going. When we hit our 21st anniversary and it's a new stage in our marriage, we don't throw out the first 20 years. Right? It's a constantly evolving dynamic thing.
Yes.
No, I would pick and choose. This year and not this year.
Come on.
So, you don't get to pick and choose.
Yeah, right.
I would love to, but I don't get to pick and choose my story. The story that was written for us, I don't have the right to be like, well, I don't like that part. And I like this part.
Come on.
Not when it's in covenant.
And mom
has... I mean, if it's a flippant relationship, I can pick and choose all day long.
And she's got a word that's going to destroy that.
I do.
You do. But as a result, on the side of the nation of Israel, and for us, I guess let me say deeper appreciation in another way. I want the value of what Yahweh has done here in our community, in our covenant family. I want the value to be recognized because something as major as a turning point of that magnitude is what we can embrace here right now. And there's a spiritual structure, there's a living structure of covenant life that you have access to, you have divine access to, if you acknowledge it for what it is and you embrace it like you would enter a covenant. Just like Jay talked about. His posture of how he entered his covenant, that's the posture we need to have for his supreme characteristic of his chosen people. That's why we need to understand the most powerful nations in history did not have
this characteristic that we have in this house. When he says you're a peculiar people, you're a set apart people, we're not, by the world standards, the most powerful nation conquering and doing conquests like the Catholics and the Spanish Inquisition and taking over and threatening lives. And we don't have the most money and we don't have the most advancement. We don't have the biggest mega church.
Yeah.
Right? We're not characterized by any of that. The way the Creator chose to characterize His chosen people was covenant life. Yeah. And we have the same thing in this house. So what do we get? What do you get if you're still like, let me take it to a level of, this is what you get, okay? You will be informed of your purpose. That's just a that's just fruit. You will be informed of your purpose.
You mean not day to day?
You have an understanding of holiness and justice. How could you not? If you hear and obey and you engage in His covenant framework of life, how can you not have a greater understanding for holiness and justice? You will know your role across time and space. And you will know your destiny, like know it. There's something powerful that happens when you know your role. It's like Megan talked about, know your place. Know your place. If I can say I know my place, I know my role across time and space, I know my destiny, I've been informed of my purpose, there is absolutely nothing anybody can say or do that is going to sway me or push me out of that place. It's just not going to happen. When you've connected with the will of your Creator and He says, this is your purpose, nobody's going to knock you out of that. So if you've ever struggled, like, and you can see how that struggle filters down into every aspect of daily life. Right? The one of the reasons why what's conveyed as His ways is because it applies to daily life. You can see how impactful that would be to know His will, His purpose, His ways in your everyday life, which is equally as detrimental on the flip side if you don't know those things and how detrimental it can be in your daily life. Now, another thing that was apparent in this Torah portion is that there's mediators. You have Moshe, you have the elders, right? You have the eldest sons from households going and getting the oxen. You have all these people stepping in a place as mediators. But despite the fact that there was mediators, the entire community had a shared responsibility. This is the way, this is how Yahweh is. This is an aspect of how Yahweh is. When you engage in covenant life and covenant community, there is no central government, central governing authority within a community. Because the responsibility is shared. Right? There's no room, there's less room by design for people to blame other people, because you can't say, oh, well, so-and-so, this is their fault. Because that doesn't exemplify shared responsibility. Right? Everybody's in it 100%. It's not, well, there's 100 of us, so I'll commit 1%. Everybody's in it 100%. 100 people, 100% in. Not 100 people, 1% in. Right? Did you want to talk about... that's what I was saying. You have a word that's going to destroy that whole thing, talking about what you were telling me earlier.
I don't know which part. No. Because I want to talk about the pattern and the protocol. I don't know where you're going.
Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Well, let me conclude this real quick. So this covenant is characterized or defined by divine grace on one side and human response on the other side. Okay, and one thing that kind of popped in my spirit when I was thinking about human response or shared responsibility, I was hearing it, like I was hearing the word responsibility, like response ability, like your ability to respond.
Come on, that's a word.
Not, because you can think shared responsibility, like, oh, I have to...
Yeah,
take
just
the trash
100%
out.
Response.
I have to.
That's it.
The your ability
just
to respond.
Yeah.
Like I heard what you said and I will obey.
Yeah.
I'm gonna respond. Yeah. I'm gonna walk out obedience.
Yeah.
How many of us were like, I wonder what my responsibility is? How am I gonna do? Just say yes.
Yeah. Your responsibility is your ability to respond.
Yeah. Praying.
So because of this, the dual nature of this covenant, the covenant life gives access to intimacy with Yahweh. Now I'll just get into kind of transition into this last point that I want to make, that in this Torah portion, we see a pattern and a protocol being established. It's a pattern we haven't seen before, so you could say it's a new pattern, but saying it's new doesn't just mean everything else is old and therefore bad, and therefore we disregard that and only hold on to the new. Right? Hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, just because it's a pattern we haven't seen doesn't mean therefore it's new, therefore everything else is old, therefore everything else is bad, and this is good, and we're disregarding everything old because it's bad. Right?
Isn't everything that Moshe released on the mountain from before?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the context of the agreement to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
So it wouldn't make any sense to say now it starts.
Right.
The same thing with Yeshua. Everything that he came...
Just to prove that point, when it's like an engagement. Prior to this was engagement. On Mount Sinai was the actual covenant which ratified everything that took place in the engagement. It solidified everything. It made everything official. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, you can't unwind the two from each other. Okay? Now this new pattern and protocol, if you read through the Torah portion, you can see these things. And I want you guys to write these things down because you see these exact same things leading up to Yeshua's death.
Yeah.
And in his death, you see the exact same pattern and protocol.
Yeah.
Which goes to show that Yahweh's intent was that this pattern and protocol of dispensing covenant life to his people through covenant was permanent until the end of the age.
Yeah.
Okay? Both situations, and I'll just say in the old and in the new, let me say it this way. Under Moshe and under Yeshua, there was sacred locations for both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There was Golgotha where the cross was, where Yeshua died, and there's Mount Sinai. Two mountains, two hills. Okay? Covenant was being established. The gap was being closed between God and humanity in both situations. The covenant was sealed by blood in both situations. Both situations, you have the 70 elders eating and drinking before the presence of the Lord at Sinai. And you have Yeshua's disciples eating his last supper with him before he goes to the cross. There's glory being encountered in both situations. There's a call to obedience by Moshe and by Yeshua in both situations. There's a call to obedience and faith in both locations. And what does Yeshua say? He says, I know you'll love me if you will obey my commands. What commands is he talking about? He's not talking about the New Testament. Right? He says, I know you love me. Think of it in terms of covenant. Think of the bridegroom saying, I know you love me if you obey my commands. What did the people say at Mount Sinai? We heard what you said and we will obey your commands. Okay? A veil was torn in both situations, giving direct access, giving you access to enter into his presence in both situations. The clouds that rested on the mountain for 6 days represented a veil to where on the seventh day Moshe stepped in and surpassed the veil and stepped into his presence. When Yeshua died, the veil was torn, giving us access into his presence. Right?
Right.
The people were able to enter into his presence with confidence to the point to where they could eat and drink with him. And this is kind of the, I'm sure there's more, but this is the last point that stood out to me. There's mediators in both situations. Mm-hmm. Who's the mediator at Sinai?
Moshe.
Who's the mediator at Golgotha?
Yeshua.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does it mean to be a mediator? Mm. Means you're the go-between between two parties. Right?
Yeah.
Moshe between Yahweh and the nation of Israel. Yeshua between Yahweh and the nation of Israel. Okay? Now what's crazy about this is when you just, like, I try to approach it like, okay, I know what mediator means, but I look up the definition anyway. Somebody between two parties, closing a gap. Now, in what many call the New Testament, Yeshua the mediator points to Moshe the mediator. In what people call the Old Testament, Moshe the mediator points to Yeshua the mediator. Right? And both mediators are pointing the people to Yahweh.
Yep.
If we need to know that, we know that. But we need to know that because that helps affirm to us that Yeshua didn't do away. Yeshua and Moshe were walking out the exact same protocol. They both point to each other and they both point the people to Yahweh. If they're walking out the exact same protocol, then why would we think that Yeshua walking out that protocol wiped out the relevance of Moshe walking out the same protocol doing the exact same thing?
Yeah.
They're mirrors of each other that are both pointing his people to Yahweh. Okay? I wanted to paint that picture of the protocol that's permanent, that's been established, because Yeshua is following the exact same protocol. The exact same protocol that establishes covenant life for the bride, that opens the door for Yahweh to reveal himself so that we can reflect Yahweh to everybody else. Okay? Now, one of the things I know you were going to mention was just the dynamic of the agreement in like individual versus all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh. I was trying to think of like pick and choose.
I think maybe it's because we're in the week of covenant that just things are being settled. So this is one of the words that I feel that is for us. So covenant, in the sense of the word that it's an agreement. Another way of saying that is the vows or the covenant that you live by, the agreement that we live by, is a standard. Right? I'm in a covenant. We have a standard of how we walk.
Right.
So the reflection of that standard is what sets me apart from any other marriage or this community. The way we walk sets us apart from any other community because of the standard that you walk by in context to relationship. I want us to understand the difference between standard, covenant, and agreement versus relationship. So covenant is a standard, and that's what sets you apart. If it sets you apart, it means it's public.
Come on.
Okay, if you're in a covenant, it should be public, because then what's the point of having a covenant if nobody knows about it? Because the purpose of having a covenant is to set me apart, that I'm not attached to anything else other than what I'm supposed to be attached to. So it naturally has to be public. Because if it's not public, then that means I can attach to anything and everything that's around me. You guys know those people that have no conviction. They can believe in anything. That's the opposite of what we want. So that's why covenant has to be public. Okay?
That's good.
So, in this scenario, and with Yeshua, what I want to try to express is that this was not an individual covenant. Let me get into this. This covenant was not secret, and it was not hidden. There was nothing about Yeshua that was secret, hidden. Okay. He also, now it's just gonna be a little spicy for a second. He didn't die. Just follow me through. He did not die for you personally. Just for a moment. I'm talking about the standard. The standard he gave access to you, he did not die for this personal hidden standard. It was one standard that was public, and it was the same for all. Mount Sinai. It is one standard. He did not make personal agreements with each individual person. He had one agreement.
Oh, that's good.
Okay? There is one standard. I am breaking this down for the purpose of us understanding the difference between one standard and your individuality in how you operate with Yeshua. Because the moment you say that the standard is personal, you now have broken the standard for the loophole to say it's under personal relationship. You have access to a personal relationship with the covenant maker and with the covenant. That's the only thing that's personal. The standard is for everyone. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you can have a personal relationship with the agreement as well as the one who created it and who you partner with in that agreement, but you do not have your own private agreement with him. Especially if it does not abide by the word. That's the problem that we're running into. Everybody has a personal relationship, which then says, I have a personal agreement, which is a separate covenant from the covenant you carry, and now our standards are all over the place and gives you access to be able to redefine by the context of your feel-good relationship filter,
yep,
to then define the covenant.
Yes.
If I say, I have a personal relationship with you, so that personal relationship should then define the covenant, my covenant would be like this. The covenant and standard is what defines my relationship.
Yes.
And my relationship with that covenant is personal, but the standard is not.
Yeah.
We have to make sure we understand that the standard is not personal. Because then I'll fight against the standard and make it personal. The standard is not personal. Is this?
Yeah.
Does it make sense? Yeah. If there is a standard that says that you will be faithful and I don't want to be, then I'm going to fight the system. Or I'm going to fight, that's a weird word, but I'm going to fight the standard in order to subject our covenant to what I think it should be, versus the standards is what defines, you will be faithful.
Yeah.
That's then how I'm defined in my personal relationship.
Right.
So the foundation is I'm faithful, my personal relationship and how I walk, is it comes out of being faithful. Does that make sense? Is that okay then to go back? Yeshua did not die for you to have a personal standard by the terms of how you feel that you get to define.
Yep.
That's good.
That's not what he died for, an agreement that is mutual on both parties, that is ultimately his standard, and you say yes. He carries the standard, you say yes. It's a response to the standard.
Yep.
That's it. Nothing personal about it. You agree or you don't.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Saved or not. Agree? Saved. Don't agree? Not saved. Yeah. Can I say that?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I agree to be married? I'm married. I don't agree to the standard of covenant, marriage, and vows?
Right.
We don't say I do. We're not married.
Yeah.
It's not an altar call. It's an agreement to a standard. Do you say yes to my name?
Yeah.
Out of that agreement, I hope we build a good, beautiful relationship. But if we don't, if we don't, I'm still set apart based on something that is unbreakable.
Yeah.
Stop breaking relationship over relationship. If we broke relationship over relationship, all you'd be kicked out. I can't.
Yeah.
Because of a standard.
Right.
Because it's covenant that keeps you. Relationship can be good or bad.
Yeah.
There are some of us, our relationship, not so good right now. Covenant, it's perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Standard, agreement, what I've agreed to, there.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
But do you see where we've gotten off track?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now here's what's crazy. I can't figure out what the covenant is if I start in Matthew. What am I agreeing to at the altar call? A good relationship. It's not sustainable.
Come on.
If I don't understand the covenant, then what happens is I say yes to a relationship, and the moment he doesn't fulfill my needs, I'm out. Because I answered an altar call because I needed a relationship. Now, I'm not saying that that's bad. We do need relationship. But any one of us can say, is that sustainable?
Right.
It has to be. It's not whimsical. It's not emotional.
Right.
It's an agreement.
Right. Yeah.
That is sustainable. And then in hopes the relationship will grow because of the access and all of that. But it's not the other way around. And I think we have it backwards, and that's why we're so up and down, or We just have it backwards.
Yeah.
So if we are founded as covenant people, we've got to get this. We have to get this. And that's why. And then that's why I said I can't find the covenant starting in Matthew, because the only thing that Yeshua does is point to his
right.
Father.
Yes.
It's the only thing he's doing the whole time. I'm not saying that Yeshua doesn't release commandments. He definitely explains more of the commandments. You guys saw the paperwork, which, by the way, nobody asked me for. Just saying. But there was 1,050 commandments. So based on Yeshua, my point is, I'm not saying he didn't give instructions, but all he was doing was explaining the foundation of the standard so that people would understand what they were agreeing to.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not confusing. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. There's no. If you find it, tell me. But starting in Matthew, I can't. I see the Malachi. I'm going to turn the fathers to the sons to the father, closing the gap. What's the purpose? All Yeshua did is try to explain the pattern and the protocol.
Yeah.
And somehow we've turned that in, that is how do I say that? That he's the standard. But he was only pointing to the standard.
Yep. He's the mediator.
Moshe did not write any of that stuff down in and of himself.
Yeah.
Either did Yeshua.
Yeah.
And for those that have listened in the past, that have painted this picture, that Yeshua not only wrote his own tablets, but wrote tablets against his father so that you can have a better life, is demonic.
Yeah.
It is satanic, and it is a lie from the pit of hell to get you off the narrow path so that in the end, you are not smelling like him.
Yeah.
Because all he did was point to what Yahweh said. That's all he did.
Yeah.
He didn't come up with his own set of rules and then book it. And then say, well, now send the Holy Spirit to empower you to do this own thing that the two of us came up with. That's not in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Make sense?
Yeah.
Personal relationship. I am not taking that from you. Personal relationship. It's perfect. Not sustainable if it's not founded on the agreement. That's all I'm getting at. And the agreement is the same for Brian as it is for Sarah, as it is for Jason. Same agreement. How powerful is that?
Yeah.
It's one agreement. And that's the problem, is we've tried to make these agreements personal.
Yep.
With our own set of standards. Well, this is how we function over here. Well, this is what Yahweh says, or, you know, this is what God, Jesus said that we were allowed to do over here. I mean, I got people mocking us like nobody's business, saying things like, well, you can go do what you want over there under the law, but I'm going to eat all the pepperoni I want. And I'm over here like, Revelation says you ain't making it. But it's so hard, because then they Bible thump and be like, you don't know the word. I'm like, okay. I don't understand. But does that?
Yes.
But we, you guys, I'm at the same time, I'm super passionate. You are going to miss eternity for a pepperoni slice?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, I'm not, hear me, I'm...
Okay.
What?
Good. Get passionate.
Wherever you're at, I'm not saying if you eat a pepperoni pizza, you're like going to hell or anything. I mean, I kind of said that, but I'm just saying the things that we will say, this is my personal agreement, is that I can have pork.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is insanity. Absolutely insane to say I am willing to have a covenant that is not sustainable based on relationship, where we get to define our personal agreement with one another. And he says that I had a vision and I'm going to heaven, so therefore I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Hey, let me say this. If on the other side, I don't even know if there is another side. For the sake of not knowing what's tomorrow, or what's in 100 years, or what's this all, I don't even know, but let's just say, you know, what we used to think, like, uh-huh. Heaven, anyways. Whatever that is. If I find people that have been utterly just, totally disobedient, and we're living life in heaven, it's going to be like, well, that's weird. But it's not like I'm going to be like, suck! I really wanted that pizza!
Right.
Because here's what I will say. We ain't going to be equal in heaven either. So even if they all make it, I will have nations. You might have a pepperoni pizza. You might be raining in a pig. Good for you. You made it into heaven while you get to be with pigs. While some of us will be ruling nations. So regardless, meaning let's flip it. Wouldn't you want to err on if we're just totally wrong?
Yeah. Right.
Sorry, you didn't get some pizza. And you didn't get to have sex with a cow. I don't know. Just saying. But here's the thing. You don't get to do that. You don't get to eat pig, and you don't get to.
There's laws that say you can't do that.
It's
so
a law.
It's like, that's what you're
so
missing.
So wait, like when we say, anyways, I'm out. Yeah, that's what got me too. Here's what I will say. When Yeshua said all of the laws and the prophets hang on these two laws, which by the way aren't even in the, you know, how I described that the Ten Commandments are just chapter headings. They're not even in the top ten. But when he said that those all of the laws hang on these two, what he was saying isn't, so that means you don't have to worry about any of those two.
Right.
You just, so let me paint this picture. I read this somewhere, I don't remember where I read it, but it would be like having this beautiful painting, and he says that the law hangs on these two laws. It would be like having a beautiful painting, and the two laws are the nails in the wall. If you just had the two nails on the wall, great. It's not hanging anything up.
Yeah.
But you also can't hang anything up if you don't have those two pegs in the wall. Mm-hmm. So when he said that all of the laws hang on these two, he wasn't saying none of that matters, just focus on these two. But what I will say, don't worry about the pepperoni if you don't have the two in the wall.
Yeah.
And so when Paul says that if you just got a bunch of gifts, you're just clanging noise, because what he's after is the heart and character of love. And when we look at this covenant and what it is that he's presenting and what he's giving us access to is his will, his wisdom, and his ways is not about a set of rules and regulations. Yes, because there's a standard to be set apart, but it's so that you would have your will.
Yeah.
That you would be set apart, that you would walk with wisdom, that you would have his ways, that you would mirror his character, and he is good,
right?
And so that we would be known by our love. If he is love, then love is not a feeling. How do you then understand how to operate in love is covenant, not relationship. Everybody says love is a feeling, and so we love each other. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Love is an agreement.
Yes.
Love is a contract. Love is a person who carries the contract, who carries that agreement. That is what will sustain you into a personal relationship. That's why Yeshua says that all of the laws hang on those two. Because he's talking about love. He's talking about the character and the nature of why he gave us all these instructions so that we would know how to love. Some of us, okay. Think about the last three chapters. There was a lot of if you borrow, then do this, pay back five times, make sure you leave, you know, for the widows and the poor, and, you know, don't grab all your crops. All the stuff that he said was to teach you what love looks like. Because if you don't know what it looks like, you'll define it for yourself, saying it's love, and it's not his ways.
Yeah.
It's the latest and greatest concept out there. It's the, I mean, now the concept is we don't even need covenant.
Yeah.
Yep. You just live with each other forever, and you can have multiple partners.
Yeah.
I mean, now we've...
Or have covenant with multiple.
Or, yeah, have covenant with... There's so many different things out there. So does that... So, yes. So the instructions is to teach you how to give and how to love and how to honor and how to sustain relationship. Not because he wants you to have a good personal feel-good relationship. He's teaching you how to maintain relationship because you know how to walk. You're walking holy. You're walking in his ways. Out of that, you'll have good relationships.
Right.
You don't decide, well, I wonder if we're going to have a good relationship. Then I'll abide by the contract.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Right. Yes.
The contract is what causes you to have good relationships. If you don't have good relationships, see what contract you're living by.
Yes.
Because it's not really the other way around.
Yep.
Okay. If you have lasting, loving, deep relationships, then it's probably because you're walking by those instructions he just gave.
Yeah.
Because he knows. Because if I define it, I'm gonna be keeping relationships.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. All right. I was gonna go through some pattern stuff. I don't know if we're gonna have time for that because I do have another word. Are you guys doing okay? It's only 8.
Yeah.
Yes. You
guys
fine?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why this popped out, but it has a lot to do with our DNA. So I wanted to, we're just going to point this out. We hear about Joshua in this chapter, and we've heard about Joshua in another context. We've also heard about Aaron and Hur, and we're about to hear about Aaron and Hur later on. So I want to point out a couple things. This is what was highlighted to me as I was reading it. I want to know the difference between Joshua and Aaron and Hur. Because there's a difference. Okay. This is crazy. I just wrote this down after Megan was talking. And I was like, what? Know your place. Like, as soon as she was saying that, that's what I feel this word is know your place. Because what I see is Aaron and Hur started off as spiritual partners to Moshe, right?
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't happen yet, but you see the beginnings of it. He tells the people, Aaron and Hur are going to be with you. So they were once spiritual partners to Moshe. Now they're starting to be given leadership over the people. Does that make sense? So they were like spiritual partners with Moshe, and then now they're going to be in a place of governing. People. We're not into it yet, and it's going to be a little bit of time. I'm so glad. Because we're red, I'm freaking out. You guys, please. In 10 chapters. Please. Please don't read us. But in 10 chapters, in chapter 32, anyways, in a few chapters, we end up seeing absolute destruction.
Yeah.
Absolute destruction under their leadership. They end up totally falling trap to what the people want. They appease them, and it is devastating when you understand what happened in this chapter. It is devastating what they did. They basically decide the God that took us out of Egypt. I don't know what's happened to this Moshe guy. He's been gone too long. He's getting too up there. So because that's happening, our mediator isn't around. So therefore, we're going to basically create what we think took us out of Egypt. Because it sure wasn't that. That's what ends up happening under Aaron and Hur. I just found it interesting that they were spiritual partners. Then they ended up governing and it gets destroyed. Flip side, we see Joshua. When we meet Joshua, where is he? Boots on the ground in battle with the people.
Yeah.
Such a good one. And then now we find him as in this, like, next to the closest person to Moshe.
Yeah.
As he enters into his presence.
Yeah.
Are you guys catching what I'm feeling?
Yeah.
Our foundation was founded on being with the people in battle.
Yeah.
Not all high spiritual partners.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And there's a system that has spiritual partnership that then tries to lead the people, and it ends up in absolute utter chaos. The words that I have is they forgot, they judged, they sinned, they ran wild, and caused war within themselves.
Yeah.
Does that not sound like something?
Yeah. Yeah.
So think about your foundation. Did you come from a high place and then try to govern?
Yeah, that's good.
Or are you going to come from a low place and wait for him to ascend you up?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the scripture. This is our DNA. Low C.
Right.
Submission.
Yep.
Obedience. Do the work.
Yep.
Boots on the ground. Fight the enemy. Outside the prayer closet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is our DNA.
Yeah, right.
What I'm getting at is that at some point we're going to be moving on into Joshua. Right? He becomes Moshe's partner. And he's the one that ends up taking everybody into the promised land. Mm-hmm. So the scripture that comes to my mind, this is just good.
Yeah.
1 Corinthians 15:46. The spiritual did not come first, but the natural. And after that, then the spiritual. What that's talking about is death to life. First death, then life.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. You try to seek life, you're going to get death. Seek death, you guys know what I mean. I don't mean the enemy death. I mean dying to yourself, you'll get life.
Yeah.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
So be reminded through this process because of what we're about to embark on. Be a Joshua. So be reminded that it's about being in submission, like I said, low seat, on the ground, doing the work, battle, versus what I see in Aaron and her, which is the spiritual partnership, and then trying to take the spirituality or the spiritual partnership of something and then try to govern something.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not saying that you don't tap into the spirit. But the point is that it's first done on earth.
Yeah.
Which is what is happening in this portion. The covenant is coming. The covenant is happening on earth. It's a reflection of who he is on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's power in that because he's showing us that it... I have to get into the cycle. I'm just gonna do this really quick. Because I know that can seem confusing, because obviously everything starts with Yahweh, so everything is spiritual. But what that scripture is talking about is first Adam, then Yeshua.
Yeah.
First death, then life. It's talking about, I wrote down some words that were super powerful. I think I did. Corruption to incorruption. Dishonor to glory. This is what that scripture is talking about. Weakness to power. That's what that's talking about. That's that Joshua. I'm not saying that you're not supposed to be in heaven. I'm saying that the importance to him is manifesting it on earth.
Yeah.
So that you can move from corruption to being incorruptible.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from dishonor into glory, weakness into power.
Yeah.
That's what that's talking about. So that's why I'm talking about Joshua. He was in battle into a place versus coming from a place into a place and how that got distorted.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, take the low seat. And in the low seat, he gives you the high one. Okay? All right, so I'm just going to go through the steps of the covenant. I thought that this was important because I want it to be relevant for us today. So I just kind of took what was happening with the whole ascension and then I'm calling it ascension. Going up, I'm going to make it practical and then I'm going to put it in the spirit. First of all, let me explain this. You see the levels.
Yeah.
Moshe, cloud, mediators, group.
Yeah.
Middle, people, pillars, sacrifice, sounds like what's about to be built.
Yes.
Tabernacle. It's relevant because Paul says, now you are.
Yes.
So,
when I grow.
Okay. Up until this point, we have seen that Yahweh has only spoken to Moshe alone. Mm-hmm. Up until this point, he's only given everything to Moshe. Now, he pointed out that Moshe is a prototype of Yeshua. So up until a point, Yahweh gives everything to Yeshua. Mm-hmm. And what we see in this Torah portion is the releasing of to the people.
Yeah.
Okay? So the first step that I saw, I think it was in the very first sentence. Then to Moshe, he said, come up. So step number one, in covenant. Now, here's why I'm saying covenant's a noun. It's an agreement, but there is a process to walking out agreement.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can read a definition, but if I don't understand how to apply it in my life, then I'm not going to be a walking agreement. I'm a walking covenant banner.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm married. I am a walking covenant banner.
Right.
When I'm at the gym.
Yes.
I mean, I really have to make sure they see this, because, just kidding. I was making it sound like I, you know, like, whatever. 43 years old with 5 kids, not a problem. But let's just say, I'm at the gym, I am a walking,
yep.
You know, they're like looking at me, and I'm like, well, can I have that weight right there? But that's how all wives, right? But
yes.
That's how we should be with him.
Yes.
The moment a false god goes, hey, you want to hang out today?
Yep.
It's that sneak. I mean, it's so easy in that situation. But think about it in another situation. You're hanging out. You're out at lunch. And this is a good one. You're out at lunch and it says, do you want a tip? And then the god of poverty goes, sure you want to do that? It wasn't very good service.
Everyone's getting really quiet.
Right? What does the Torah say?
Yep.
So you start to walk in his ways. You're a walking covenant banner.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by that. All right.
Good.
I don't know why I got into that. Number one, come up. This is crazy. Obey happens before the law. I mean, the law hasn't legally been given, and they have to obey. I mean, we've seen that throughout all of Scripture, but that's a concept. Why are you having to obey all those laws? Well, I was called to obey in Genesis, but I don't. The foundation of our relationship was do this and don't do that. Nobody argues with Genesis. Nobody wants to preach in Leviticus.
That's true.
Yeah. Every pastor preaches Genesis.
Yep.
And it starts with food laws.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eat this, don't eat this.
Yep.
Like it's a problem.
Right.
Yeah. But we all are supposed to obey that. And all of a sudden, then I think covenant got cut off, like Genesis 4. You guys. So, obey happens before even the law comes. That I thought was crazy. Number one, in covenant, come up. Number two. Oh my gosh, was dinner good? Number two, he speaks the word. The first thing that happens in covenant, he speaks. Think about Genesis 1. He hovers in his breath and he says, not in English, let there be light, but you understand the concept. It came out of his mouth. He spoke a word. There's so much in that. We're not going to be able to get into all of it. So there's so much in this. Even the cloud resting on Mount Sinai, the word is tabernacle. He tabernacled, he dwelt. It's the same word in the Greek. He's trying to dwell with his people. His presence was tabernacling on Mount Sinai. So he speaks the word. He proclaims it in his mouth. Then there's a response, but the response is in word. It's a verbal agreement. I'm just going to have you guys write this down, and then just think about this as you operate in covenant.
Yeah.
Get high. Come up. No, Andrew, not that high. You haven't been paying attention to me all night until I said get high, and you were like, hmm? Just kidding. All right, come up. Speak the word, respond in word. Next part is a sacrifice. Now, I want us to kind of define sacrifice. That's another kind of killing animals, and Yeshua dies, and it's just kind of this other word that we're just, look at it this way. You're going to die. You die. Sacrifice, okay? He speaks a word, you agree, you die. Got it? That's the pattern. He speaks, you say yes, you die. He speaks, you agree, his son dies. There's death, okay? But the first thing is he wants you to write it down. He speaks a word, make it on earth. He spoke in Genesis, and it happened, is what I'm getting at. They wrote it down. Habakkuk talks about this. Write it down. He's basically saying oral is not going to be good enough, because then it's going to be up to your creative memory to remember what's happened. So when I speak and you agree, write it down. Think about any promise or covenant you're dealing with tonight. He starts speaking to you. He speaks. You say yes. Just know you're going to die. Write it down.
Yeah. It's a literal contract. It's one of the contracts.
Yes, it's a contract. I'm saying write it down because you're about to die. And when you die, you're going to forget about what he said. That's why he said it's not good enough for you to just go off hearing. I need you to write it down.
That's good.
Okay? Oral is not good enough. It's basically what he's saying is what I say is important enough to not be left up to human recollection.
Yeah.
So when he speaks something, you say yes, write it down.
That's good.
That is the answer on earth. That is the manifestation of what he's saying and making it on earth. Then you got to respond again. Once you write it down, then you get to respond in action. This is the death part. Okay? Your action is the sacrifice. I'm looking at it as a prophetic word. You can look at it at Yeshua. Same thing. He said, he told Mary, you're going to be pregnant. There's a word. She said yes. Then it's written down.
Yeah.
It's written down.
Yep.
And then he's the answer on earth.
Yeah.
Okay? Response and action. Get it?
Yeah.
Next section, then you get to receive. So once you respond in action, then you get to hear the word. This is just the pattern out of what happened. But this is crazy, because a lot of us want to just stay at certain places.
Yeah.
This is, you have the response in action. Moshe was telling them, go and get a sacrifice. Start walking it out. Start working on this. Then they come together and hear. It's kind of crazy. Hear the word. Now, this is his word. His terms, not ours.
Yeah.
This is the word that is not up for negotiation. They did not negotiate at all in this. It was his word. Then there's another response with yes. So now he's spoken the word, you've responded verbally, you've written it down, you're acting on it, now you have to hear it, and then you respond again. Then you receive life. So when he's talking about how covenant is about life, that it's covenant life, this is the pattern that I drew from this, that you receive life. Because blood, even though that gets kind of weird, like he sprinkled it, life is in the blood. So sacrifice, you receive life. It's one life given for another. Now, the concept that it was half on the altar and half on the people is saying that there was two people in the agreement. Two people are receiving. Then they went up. It starts and ends with going up. Now, it's a circle because this continues. It's not one and done.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read this really quick. Hebrews 13, 20 through 21. The reason why this is a circle is because this pattern makes us complete. Yeshua makes us complete through growth and maturity. The point is that this is not a ceremony one time, it's a way of living. This is how you grow and mature. So in Hebrews it says, now may the God of Shalom, who brought up from the dead the great shepherd of the sheep by the blood of an everlasting covenant, our Lord Yeshua, make you complete in every good thing to do his will, accomplishing in us what is pleasing in his sight through Messiah Yeshua. So this is cyclical, going up and going through this pattern and protocol, I believe will help us to understand what is really happening with covenant and activate it in our lives to be able to walk it out daily. Yeah. So we understand as covenant people what that means. And you can apply this pattern with a conversation, in a relationship, in a prophecy, apply it to Yeshua's life. You can apply it to Mount obviously you can apply it to Mount Sinai. You can see what he's doing. Genesis, you can see this pattern and protocol. So if this is the pattern that he's after, if we walk this out, we're going to understand how to be a covenant people, because this is how he is. Lots of response in there, right? Lots of different ways he gives, lots of basically we have to respond each time, but there's an exchange for death to life. And if you want to transform maturity, growth, and life, then I believe that this is a huge pattern for us to walk by.
So that's all in those, what is it, 18 verses? Talking about a bihu and whatever, you know, you just, you can like skip over it because you're so in the weeds, you don't take a step back and see all this, all these dynamics of covenant. So, I mean, our prayer is that that deeper appreciation would be there, because we can recognize how big of a deal this was for the nation of Israel being birthed, receiving their identity, what that identity is and how that compares to, you know, just powerful nations and men throughout history. And it's totally opposing of each other. So, you know, just get that deeper appreciation for what it is that Yahweh has granted us in this house, because I feel like reading this Torah portion and really digging into it, for me personally, gave me the why or the belief to a lot of actions we were obedient to that I wasn't aware of. And that's a powerful thing when that happens, because then something's just solidified in your life and it doesn't matter. So hopefully there's a, that just kind of stirs up that deeper appreciation for the way that we relate to each other in this house and what that affords us and what we're missing out on if we push against it or continue to wrestle it or rebel against it or whatever. You're also recognizing what you're not receiving. So, amen.
Nope. Sometimes I just look back and I'm like, I can't believe I said that.
It was
great.
So I just want to bring it all the way back to the beginning when Megan was talking about knowing your place. And Dad just said it again, but when he's talking about the deeper appreciation of what we have in this home, I want us to settle in that, in knowing, like making that practical right now of knowing your place in this home. And in this home, there's things that he's called us to sustain. And there's things that he's called us to walk out, and things that we're personally responsible for.
Yeah.
I mean, even if we just look at even just looking at our last financial meeting, you guys know we brought that back around and we were expressing like what carried us was our investments.
Yeah.
The things that we said yes to initially is what has carried us through. But are we continuing to position ourselves in that place of response to continually say yes, or are we allowing a previous yes to carry us through? So we need to make sure that we're like knowing our place even within the home to carry that.
Previous yes carrying us through.
Is that harsh?
Yeah.
Sorry. The other thing to think about is when Dad was talking about a covenant community, it's never static and it's always growing.
Mm-hmm.
So then questioning, have we grown?
Right.
Yeah.
Have we continued to increase in our our investments? Have we continued to grow in the places that Yahweh has said to put your intentions?
Yeah.
Have we continued to expand in those areas? Like, these are all things that we want to evaluate so that we can be sure that we're being consistent in our response and in our yeses to the covenant and the things that Yahweh's asked us to walk out and uphold.
Mm-hmm.
So to just remind us, we have only a couple weeks before the year end. So if you have any of that year-end giving for businesses, personal finances, things that we need to address, obviously make sure that those are getting in. But to also just be continuing to carry that responsibility in the home of knowing our role in that. When we say yes to family, I mean, this is something we were talking about with Armory. Are you being a freeloader?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Super harsh, sorry. But literally, we've been talking about that with the teens of like, you can't go through your house and not carry your weight. You can't go through the home and not like do your chores.
Yes.
Right? Armory?
Right.
Yeah. Right?
They got like little sticker charts this week. They're super cute. But there's a responsibility that we each carry and there's a weight that we all carry. And we all know that in knowing our place and knowing our responsibility within the home.
Yeah.
So let's continue to carry that as we say yes. So there's that. And then when we're ready, we can head over to communion.
All right. Well, for communion tonight, obviously there's a lot that we could ponder on and meditate on and, you know, hopefully the spirit of what was said tonight is just kind of settling on people's spirits and stuff. But I want to say, right before we go into communion, I just want to say something about Remy. This was obviously an exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we introduced Remy to the family. And all I did was say a few things that can't happen. Okay? But I want you guys to start thinking about, like, what is the point? Obviously, we know basically what the point is. But I want you guys to start thinking about, like, what we said tonight. And, you know, kind of like, figure out when are we going to lay Remy down? Does that make sense? So like tonight we talked about, as a hint, like shared responsibility. So at some point, we're not going to carry this weight around forever, right?
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. But there's a place we're going to get to where it's like, okay, we can retire Remy because we don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So... shared responsibilities, the big hint when we can stop carrying.
Well, if I can add, we had a really good conversation a while ago where I think something to think about with covenant and or the instructions, you said will, wisdom, and ways.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that 613 contractual concept, not concepts. There are 613 foundational things of do's and don'ts. But there is about a million things from that foundation that's permissible. Your relationship, like what I said, the standard is the same. The relationship grows from the standard.
Right.
So instead of thinking about the few things that it can't do, like, for example, it can't hit the ground. What was the other it can't?
You can't leave it.
Has to be on
you.
Yeah. When do we shift and find out what we can do?
And when our understanding from the exercise is solidified to where we don't need this to remind us anymore.
Yeah.
Just throwing that up. All right, go ahead and you guys can engage with communion.
All right, you guys. It looks like we are finishing up communion. and I already see family engaging one another, which I think needs to be a directive leaving tonight. Obviously, we always connect. We always practice intentional relationship with one another. But in order to activate the heart, a huge part of the heart tonight, which was the value that we've been given and recognizing and acknowledging that value, can you be intentional tonight before you leave to verbally acknowledge with one another the value that you are carrying, even if it's a value maybe that you're recognizing in a new way tonight, that what Yahweh has done in this community in establishing a covenant community, let's be intentional in that tonight. So that is our immediate activation following our closing. But what I want to speak to before we're sent into that is the weight of gratitude. I know I use that word often, and I hope that it doesn't become something that we don't carry with the same weight, but only that it grows, that it would just continue to grow. Because what was released over you tonight is that you once were unable to reflect him because he was not able to fully reveal himself to you. Mom said you can't reflect him if he hasn't revealed himself. And in covenant life, every decision that you have made to get you here was a decision to pave a way for you to be introduced into a covenant lifestyle, which means that he has permission to reveal himself, which means that you then have the ability to reflect him, and that means that you didn't have that ability before. I don't know about you, but that makes me feel overwhelmed with gratitude that in the entirety of this process, which we can hone in or highlight the hardship or the struggle or the press or the wrestling or the trial or whatever it is that will keep us from wanting to be excused from it altogether, that all of that is for all of this. It's for all of him, and it's for all of you, for him to be fully revealed, for you to be informed of your purpose, for you to understand his holiness and justice. Oh, poor baby. That was a double bomb. Oh my gosh. Okay. Obviously, in expressing a heart of value for what we've been given, make sure to kiss him and love on him and tell Amber she is an amazing mother and that she does carry her family and her children so well. Dwayne, just encourage her when she comes back. He's ready with the jokes.
That's how Galway is with us. We like fall over and
then double bonk. Now I'll comfort you. All right. Anyways, you guys know what I'm saying, right? All of that for him, all of it for you. Leaving with hearts of gratitude, understanding everything that we have walked through to get us to this place where we can say we are living a covenant or learning how to live a covenant life, which affords him the ability to fully reveal himself, meaning that that is the purpose that we get to live for, is to reveal him, to reflect him. And that is a gift to be on the other side of everything we had to endure. Not that there's not a lifetime of that, but simply that it's like what Dad said, It brought so much clarity, so much understanding to every decision that's been made up to a point. So, anyways, I'm grateful, but also overwhelmed that what's agreed to is His will, His wisdom, and His ways, that's now all that we have to look forward to, right? Instead of focusing on the press that gets us to a place where we would be positioned to live a covenant life, it's, okay, now we're going to walk in a covenant lifestyle where we get to be entrusted with His will, His wisdom, and His ways, reflecting Him fully and wholly in our lives, which gives it its ultimate purpose.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.
Thing with
value. You're valued.
You say it.
You're valued.
Good night, Kingdom Heirs.
You're valued.